sexy, huh?
You ready?
We are.
You ready?
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, our expert, joining us here on this Tuesday. It's been a while since we've talked to him on a Tuesday, but he is in demand on television. And boy, he was dead on right about his, you know, the shot behind him. We got the extra layer when we had him on our Zoom call when he joined us that you don't see on ESPN. So we got that extra shelf that you don't see on television. So we feel special.
The top shelf with Tim Hasselbeck.
Yeah. No, the wide angle is you got to be in the circle of trust to get the wide angle. And the wide angle is going to it's gonna show things the TV doesn't show, just to be honest.
Well, no, that was – it was in the shot, the NFL Europe helmet, right? That was
– Yeah, that one makes – listen, you can't have the Berlin Thunder helmet not make TV. I mean – but everybody needs to see the Berlin Thunder helmet. No, I think there's some. I think it's a wedding photo. I think there's a look at this. This is a 2014 girls' first grade flag football ball on the shelf that you know is not that doesn't make it on SportsCenter.
Yeah. By the way, we had quite the combo on Friday. You at noon, Trent Dilfer at 1. Trent was in Omaha with his girls, one at Lipscomb, one at Louisville, and I think they were playing in what, the NCAA tournament, volleyball tournament?
For volleyball tournament, yes. In fact, earlier that day, I Lipscomb Academy football must have put something out on Twitter like, hey, you know, check out the Dilfer girls playing. And I read it wrong. So I thought it was like Louisville volleyball was playing Lipscomb University volleyball. And I was like, oh, now he has one of his daughters a little bit more intense than the other. And so I was like, hey, I hope so-and-so wins because otherwise that's going to be a tough, like that's going to be a tough family dinner afterwards. I thought they were playing each other. So which he responded, he was like, no, I would not be able to handle them playing each other. Like he's like, I think I would have a heart attack during the match.
Have you had to experience anything? I mean, that is like a parent's nightmare, right? I mean, kids squaring off against each other?
My only experience with that is this, okay? I was with the Giants. We were playing the Seahawks. You guys may remember the game. Like, the Giants, we jumped off sides like 15 times. And Jay Feely was our kicker. He missed, I'm not exaggerating, I think he missed 5 field goals in the game. So it's like this crazy game. Giants out at the Seahawks. Well, the night before the game, you know, we all kind of get together as a family. You know, me and my brothers, my parents are there. Brought my grandmother into town. And, you know, the whole idea was like my parents were like, well, we're going to cheer for the offense. Well, the game gets tight and goes into overtime. And next thing you know, the Seahawks are like battling back and – like Eli throws a pick or something, and I look over to where my family is sitting, and everyone's like high-fiving each other and stuff. I was like, hold up a second.
Hey.
What was that? Like, hey, we're going to cheer for the offense stuff, yeah?
We had Dan Shanka on last hour, and we were talking about it seems pretty uneventful for the first two picks, but San Francisco gave up a haul. They clearly know who they want at 3. But it seems like everybody's all over the place, Tim, about what the 49ers are going to do at 3. So what's your intel telling us? What do you think they're going to do at 3? Because they know. I just feel like, you know, but everybody else is kind of trying to throw darts to figure out who it is.
Yeah. Well, so I think you're right in that they know. You know, there's been a lot of this talk about, why are they doing this at Trey Lance's workout if they know they're taking Mac Jones and, you know, they're still deciding. Like, you don't do what they did, to your point, to move all the way up there if you don't know exactly what you're doing. Now, I think there's probably a reason to, you know, not necessarily give away what you're doing. But I also think this, like, just take this as an example. If you represent Trey Lance, okay, and the 49ers, you know, want you to work out, and they want you to work out with a specific coach that you're not working out with, which is what happened yesterday. And they're not going to take you. You don't do it. Like, why are you going to go work out? John Beck or Jay, one of the Beck brothers, who was the quarterback trainer that Kyle Shanahan wanted Trey Lance to work out with. You don't do it if they're not going to potentially draft you. So I just think there's something there. To me, it doesn't make sense. I think Mac Jones is a good prospect. You've heard me talk about Mac Jones. I would not draft him in the first round because I think there's athletic deficiencies there that, you know, would kind of disqualify him from being a first-round draft pick. You know, Trey Lance doesn't have those kind of issues. He is a little bit more of a project, but he's got all the tools. I just think that 49ers pick is either Fields or Lance. I actually don't believe that it's Mac Jones.
Interesting. So I'm going to ask you what your thoughts are on this, because we see this all the time, and it's not fair just to pigeonhole Trey Lance with this because he played at North Dakota State, because sometimes at the Power 5 schools, they've got such athletic players that, you know, you see the same film on them. But I brought up yesterday on the show, Tim, that I've seen, you know, I don't watch film like you or others, but the clips that I've seen, and I've seen quite a bit of Trey Lance, it seems like he's always throwing to wide open guys. Like, how do you truly evaluate? Mm-hmm. Like, I want to see him make the tight throws. I want to see him throw somebody open, right? I feel like I'm not seeing those, and I'm not saying they don't exist. But when that happens, when you see a lot of film on a kid where, for whatever reason, why it was happening, but he's just constantly throwing to guys that he's never going to see at the NFL level. Guys like that are never going to be open. How do you truly evaluate them?
It makes it really hard, and so I think there's fool's gold when watching tape, and I think it's one of the reasons it's hard to evaluate quarterbacks. Trey Lance is a great example. You're exactly right about guys running free and wide open. People need to understand that North Dakota State is the Alabama of that league, okay? Like, that's who they are. They are a juggernaut, and they dominate it. They dominated it with Carson Wentz. They dominated it with Easton Stick, who's with the Chargers, and they dominated it with Trey Lance. Like, they are the Alabama of that, you know, that division, okay? Well, so when you watch some of that stuff, yes, he's got guys running free. Kind of a similar thing with Wentz, because, look, they're doing a good job. They have better players, and they're well-coached. And, you know, on top of that, some of the plays that you see where he's, you know, running with the football, it's because there was a mistake, you know, a mental mistake, missing a pass protection issue, and he's just bigger, stronger, faster that he's running through guys, you know. Like, we ran, you know, some highlights yesterday on SportsCenter, and they were against UC Davis, Montana State, and some other school that I forget. Well, I mean, we're not going to hear those schools called a lot, you know, during the draft. We're just, or at all. So, yeah, that's a problem. But equally as difficult, Darren, I would tell you is this. When you watch Mac Jones, watch him throw a bubble against Notre Dame, a really good team, and it's not even blocked correctly, and it goes 35 yards for a score. Or watch him throw an RPO and he throws an inside slant, and one of those wide receivers takes it 40 yards for a touchdown. Like, there's fool's gold at every level, and sorting through it is really hard.
Okay, I've made it well known on this show, and I know I've brought it up with you many times, but I want to get your perspective because you've played both roles. You've been a starter, you've been the backup, so you understand the importance of both. And I just want you to tell me, concerned, not concerned. I've harped for years whenever I feel like the Titans don't have an adequate backup, like how big of a mistake that is. And, you know, when I was excited when they got Ryan Tannehill just because I thought, man, that is the best backup that they've had in a good while, and we know how that's all played out. Here they sit with Logan Woodside and DeShone Kizer. I understand if Ryan Tannehill plays 17 games like he played 16 last year, it's a complete non-issue. Like, I get that. But if he misses a month, like, are you comfortable with those guys as your backups? going into a season and knowing if Tannehill has to miss any sort of time, that those guys, whether it's Logan Woodside, I'm assuming it would be Woodside as the backup, as the two, are you comfortable with him going out there and getting you wins, let's say in a tight race when you're battling the Colts for a division?
I would say this. I think that I think Logan Woodside is a guy whose physical ability is really good. Like, I think there are guys that, you know, are playing, you know, starters that maybe he physically is as talented or more talented than, which is why I think that even without, like, his path, you know, that he's lasted the way that he has. You know, Hundley's a tricky one for me because I think there's potential there, but yet he just has played poorly whenever he's been given the opportunity. So, look, I like the idea that, you know, you're not just kind of handing it to Logan Woodside. You know, do I think that you could maybe find, you know, more competition there? Yeah, I think you probably could. You know, all of that to say, you know, like, well, how do you go find the guy that you're interested in that you're talking about? You know, like, how do you go figure out who that is that you would, you know, that you would want to pay? Like, what? I guess here should be the question: how much money do you want to pay your backup?
Yeah, that's
you
the key, right? The budget.
$5 million a year.
What are you budgeting?
Do you want to pay him $5 million a year? Like, what is it? Like. Yeah.
That's a good question.
He's asking you, Darren. He's asking you the same thing I always ask you because you say that you bring the same thing up, but that is such a huge part of it, right?
I understand. Well, at the time they had, you know, they got, and I understand they got a sweetheart deal from Miami, but you know, I said initially several, I guess it would be a month or two ago, I said I would kick the tires on Alex Smith and see where his head is at. Obviously, that is out of the picture now.
His head is gone.
As we learned yesterday, his head is out of the game. He's retiring. But I said I would ask the guy, hey, are you cool coming here and being a backup? And I don't have any clue about the answer. This was, you know, a month and a half ago. But somebody like that with that experience, to me, would have been a perfect fit for the right price. And I understand the price is the question. And I don't know what the price would have been with him.
Guys, yeah, the price on those guys, I think, is well north of $5 million. And I think that, you know, you can look at a team like the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. Look, their backup is Blaine Gabbert, you know. And so, like, I think the reality is, like, once you get into, like, the, you know, guys you can get your hands on that you're not paying elite backup money to, because I don't think you want to based on Tannehill's age, general health, you know, all of that stuff. Like, I don't think you want to get outside the Nick Mullins, Josh Dobbs, Brian Hoyer, like, world. I don't think you do. And so, Matt Barkley, for that matter. Like, I don't think you want to get outside of that. And I think that that's kind of exactly where you sit with, you know, the guys that they have.
Tim Hasselbeck is with us. Tim, your thoughts on the Steelers' decision to extend Mike Tomlin? I guess we shouldn't be surprised. They've had, what, three coaches in about 100 years, the Steelers? But this did you see this coming?
No, I don't. I can't say I saw it coming, but I think my reaction would kind of be like yours there, Willie, where it's like, well, what do we think? It's the Steelers. Like, you know, of course. And I think sometimes even with good coaches, you know, there comes a time where you need change and different scenery and stuff like that. I don't think that that's where the Steelers are. I think he's a good coach. I think he's well respected by the players. He's certainly well respected by other coaches around the league. And sometimes you got to ask yourself, like, all right, well, if Mike Tomlin were available, would there be multiple opportunities for him? And the answer to that is yes. And so if that's the case, I just think that, you know, even though that team is probably going through some turnover, and it's going to be turnover that goes beyond this year, I think it does make a lot of sense for them.
You know, as I read the daily stuff on Deshaun Watson, I'm just trying to think from the perspective of the Texans as they get ready for the draft. I guess they're trying to get as much clarity as they can before the draft actually starts, but probably thinking they're not going to know the full picture here. So what do you think this does to how they approach the draft?
I mean, I think it's I think that it basically, I think I would say this. I mean, I think it basically totally hamstrings them on anything they can do. I mean, you could go from, you know, everything's fine, he's at training camp, he's your starting quarterback, right, to he never plays another snap in the NFL. Like, you literally could have that type of swing with that situation. So you're either building around a guy that is, you know, easily a top 10 quarterback to completely restarting at the position. So I think it is an impossible situation because you don't know the outcome and you're not going to know the outcome. And I quite honestly don't know how you handle it.
Yeah, I don't know either. I think that, and that all of what you said is separate from the whole dispute that was going on, right? With I don't want to play there anymore. Like
totally
that's like a second
totally
layer,
separate.
Right?
Hey, when's the last time we heard about that?
Right?
When's the last time that we heard that you know Cal McNair lied to Deshaun Watson, you know, and that he's going to sit the year out and not show up to training camp? The last time we heard that. So I mean, I think it's pretty clear you can't take that position now if you're Deshaun Watson. Now, honestly, you just hope that you can go back to the Texans.
I always am curious of what you hear about what the Patriots are doing. They've always fascinated us, right? Here they are in sort of a different situation than they've been in years. But you know the wheels are turning. You know they've got a plan. It's been a little interesting, you know. With Cam Newton, everybody's wondering, is he going to be the quarterback against? What do you think is happening? What do you think the philosophy is with the Patriots? Do you feel like they think they can win next year and get back to being a playoff team, say?
I mean, I have to think they believe that they can. The Cam Newton thing surprises me. I was wrong about how well I thought that he would play. I mean, this is a passing league. He was terrible passing the football a year ago. I mean, just there's really no other way around it. Now, I'm sure they feel like they got better. Between N'Keal Harry being a year older and Kendrick Bourne and Nelson Aguilar and guys like that, they did get a bunch of guys that were opt-outs from a year ago coming back. So I do think that they probably feel like their roster this time of year versus when guys were opting out, you know, roughly a year ago is better. But quarterback's important. And if Cam Newton is the answer, which his contract states that basically he is not, but if that ends up what they're doing, I just have to say I don't feel great about that happening. And I know a lot of people have linked them to quarterbacks, and I think that could easily make sense. And, you know, I may change how I feel about the prospects of the direction of that franchise if for some reason they end up with Justin Fields.
Justin Fields, that would be interesting. Tim Hasselbeck is with us, ESPN NFL analyst, joins us usually on Wednesdays, but at 1 o'clock here on a Tuesday today. So sticking with the quarterback theme, I think we'd all agree that Josh Allen of any quarterback last year took the biggest leap just across the board with what he was able to do getting his team to the AFC title game. You can make the argument the year before it was Ryan Tannehill right here in Nashville with the Titans. In your mind, and it's a broad question, but who has the biggest opportunity to be this year's Josh Allen or Ryan Tannehill?
I think on the Ryan Tannehill front, you've heard people kind of talk about Sam Darnold as a guy that, you know, can take a huge, you know, leap just because of, you know, the environment that he's in. So I think that, you know, for a Tannehill example of a guy with change of scenery and how significant that is, I think that could be Darnold. For a young guy who, you know, maybe just plays better, you know, a little bit more along the lines of Josh Allen, I think, you know, there'd maybe be an element for me that would feel like, you know, I think there's going to be a lot of pressure on Drew Locke. I think there's a lot of talent around him. Now, I think there's a chance that they find him some legitimate competition in this draft. But if it's not too early and he can kind of fight his way through it, I could see him as a guy who, you know, I think people are lukewarm on at best, that could take a big jump.
Okay, so second or third year guys that you look could, and it doesn't have to be, you know, someone that's been bad necessarily, but, you know, has been average and they're just kind of working their way up. So a second or third year guy, how would you answer that question of who could make the biggest leap?
Well, I mean, I don't think Kyler Murray's been bad, but
no.
So he's, you know, so like he would be a guy that I feel like, you know, I said a year ago that I thought he was kind of, you know, off the radar, you know, an NFL MVP type of player. Like he could be that. So, you know, I think Kyler Murray would be a guy that, you know, I would say, so I guess, so we're going the last 2 years, essentially. Look, I think I'm going to be interested to see what Joe Burrow looks like. You know, it seems like we didn't get a chance to see a ton of him. You know, obviously the injury and coming back from it, he was so mobile, kind of slippery, and you know, kind of, you know, had good escapability and that stuff. So it'll be interesting to see what that looks like, but I think sometimes we forget about guys if they're out for a little bit because of an injury. We forget, like, look, he was the number one overall pick for a very good reason.
Is there a quarterback in – you guys were talking about backups earlier. So is there a quarterback in this draft that you could see, you know, in the mid rounds, later rounds, that's not getting a lot of hype, but you've seen enough to make you think, okay, that's somebody that – I could trust you develop into a quarter, into a backup quarterback, maybe not necessarily right away, but is there someone that stands out to you that you like from that aspect?
So I think that Jamie Newman is really interesting. Here's the deal. He was a starter at Wake Forest. He was essentially a completely raw prospect when he came to Wake Forest. He's about 6'3", 235. He's a very good runner with the football. You know, super strong, more strong than fast, but he's a very good runner. He throws an excellent deep ball. He's got great accuracy. I think he's very good. Now, he played in this unique offense at Wake Forest. It's like heavy RPO offense, and so it's a little unique. Well, then he transfers to Georgia, basically gets beat out at Georgia, and then opts out for the season. Had he stayed at Wake Forest and had a monster year, which I think he would have had, I think people would be talking about him as a fringe first-round pick. Now, he won't go in the first round, and so he's going to be a later-round pick, and who knows what his opportunity will be. But he, in some ways, to me, is a version of, you know, Trey Lance or Justin Fields, but maybe not as athletic. But he's played a good amount of football, and I think he can actually be a pretty good player if, you know, kind of in the right situation and you put the right work in to help him kind of get better at things that he hasn't done a whole lot of.
Interesting. That sounds like a bad decision then.
So he should have stayed in the closet.
Should have stayed.
Huh?
Well, no, and seriously, but I think this, you're at Wake Forest, you're playing in front of like 15,000 people. The people you're playing against all have better players than you have. And because of the transfer portal thing, it's like, look, I've kind of accomplished what I feel like I needed to here. Like, what if I go to Georgia, who's desperate for a quarterback? Well, you go there, and it's this weird year, and now you're playing under center some, and, you know, they get another transfer, and maybe you're just like, wait a second, I might get beat out. That's not going to be good. Mm. So we kind of get saved by the opt-out, you know, rule because of COVID, And so opting out probably was better than getting beat out, but, you know, sometimes the grass isn't always greener.
Oh, well, I bet Willie just perked up here at that.
See?
I was waiting for
that. See, Tim and I think are on the same wavelength on this whole thing. I just don't like the free-for-all transfer direction that everything's
going.
Oh, well,
listen, buckle up because
I know
it's only getting worse.
College basketball is a mess with this.
Listen, it's bad. Look, I think that it's Listen, if a guy's in a bad situation, coach leaves or whatever, look, I get it for the player. But I see it as bad for the player and for the coaches. I know that college coaches, they're part of the reason they're working the portal so hard is because they think that they're like, look, we're going to lose guys that we don't think we're going to lose. Like we have guys that enter the portal that were like, why are you going? Like, we're expecting you to play literally, 80% of the offensive snaps this year. Why are you going somewhere else? Like,
I'm curious to see how it changes recruiting because, coaches are going
to. You're going to have recruiters on your staff to re-recruit your players.
Yeah.
Like that center on that and people that are recruiting high school players. It might be just as important to keep your guys in the stable.
Hey, I'll give you a good one. Remember Kendall Hinton, who started the game for the Broncos this past year?
Mm-hmm.
At quarterback, but he's really a receiver. Well, you could kind of maybe think of it because of Wake Forest.
You mean when all the quarterbacks were hanging out together and all got...
Yeah, correct, correct, correct. Well, he entered the transfer portal when he was at Wake Forest because he was playing in the slot, this and that. Well, Dave Clawson, their coach, said to his mom, he's like, look, I don't understand he transferred the portal, but this is the best place for him, and quite honestly, I think he's going to end up being back here. Well, sure enough, he kind of enters the portal, doesn't find a spot, ends up being back there, and look, still found his way to the NFL because in that offense, playing in the slot with kind of a quarterback mindset, being a former quarterback, was great for him. Had he transferred to somewhere else, like, that might have been it. So, I do think it's an I'm with you on that, Willie.
Tim, always appreciate it. You have a great rest of your day, and we look forward to talking to you next week.
Cool. See you guys.
Tim Hasselbeck, ESPN NFL analyst, our expert here, joining us today on a Tuesday. He's got some TV conflicts for tomorrow. Typically, it's Wednesdays at noon. Masvidal and Usman, they put on a show the last time, and when they stepped in the octagon, they're going to do it again. And DraftKings Sportsbook, the official sports betting partner of the UFC, is putting you in the center of this weekend's title fight. Yes, pick either main event fighter to win this weekend's UFC 261 title fight, and DraftKings Sportsbook will give you 26-1 odds. You just bet $5 of your money on either fighter to win, and if they walk away with the belt, you cash $130. Not bad, huh? There's no better way to put your MMA knowledge to the test than to put your money where your mouth is, and all you have to do is download the top-rated DraftKings Sportsbook app right now. Use that code 1025GAME, and when you sign up, turn $5 into $130 if the title contender of your choice wins. That code again, 1025GAME. This is, of course, for a limited time only at DraftKings Sportsbook. You must be 21 years of age or older, Tennessee only. Restrictions do apply. See DraftKings.com/sportsbook for details. If you or someone you know has a gambling problem and needs help, call or text the Tennessee Red Line, 1-800-889-9789. Thank you, Jeremy. Appreciate it. Don't forget on Friday, we're giving away free beer. That was a joke from earlier today on myself.
Got to be listening.
Who doesn't want free beer? Thank you. You do. And you need to be listening on Friday. You'll have a chance to win a $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House. That's located at Opry Mills Mall. Now, this is supposed to go to Adam Vinkin, but you have a chance to take that from him on Friday when you call in. So make sure you participate on Friday to get that $25 gift card from Bavarian Beer House located at Opry Mills Mall. Now, have you guys seen this story about, I was just thinking about all the times we've heard this discussion here about the Power Fives, right, pulling away.
Yep.
Have you heard about this Super League in Europe, over in Europe with the European
soccer?
I'm just
reading about this a little bit today for the first time. I don't know if I've wrapped my arms around it because I don't understand the current system as much, but this is really interesting to me.
Well, if you're seeing, at least if you guys are seeing what I'm seeing, it looks like today during the course of our show, it's starting to unravel a bit. I just saw where Manchester City said, yeah, I think we're out of the Super League. And then I just saw another one. Was it
Chelsea?
Maybe? Chelsea.
Also, U-turn.
Now, Chelsea's like, yeah, we're out too.
Well, because they're being threatened. And is what they knew what would happen.
Okay, but here's the deal, though. Is it kind of like the NCAA, though? Aren't their threats a little bit hollow? I mean, when they said, oh, you will not compete in the World Cup, do they have the rights to really do that? Can they do that? Do they have the power, the juice, to really do that?
I think FIFA is one of the most crooked organizations.
Right. Isn't it hilarious? Them coming from the, right? Coming from them like, hey, don't you do this. I mean, like, really?
Yeah. So, I mean, because, yeah, the Super League may not come, you know, to happen because there's a power struggle with all these leagues in soccer. I mean, soccer is, I'm learning more and more about, you know, not just in this country, but soccer around the world and just the control that it would appear some of these leagues have is astonishing. But FIFA,
or you mean the money that they print on a daily basis?
Sure, sure. And it's the money. I mean, they, you know, Messi and these
billions.
Guys. Yeah, billions. Billions.
With a B. Billions at stake. Because they said this would be, what, close to like five, it'd be like $4.5 billion?
Yeah.
A year?
The founding clubs intend to split about $4.5 billion in seed money for signing on. And that was so Man U, Arsenal, Barcelona, Inter Milan, Real Madrid, you know, teams like that would be a part of it. But, you know, then FIFA and, you know, others come in and basically say, like, all right, well, you'll be banned from the leagues that you're in now, because they want to start this in, I think, 2023. So you'd be banned from the leagues that you're in now, and then FIFA saying, "Yeah, your players can't participate."
So they're doing everything they can to block this.
Yeah,
this
of
thing.
Of course.
What's the upside? What's the downside of having this league?
Well,
what's it? Why do people want to have this league?
It's money.
Money.
It's a cash grab. Cash grab. That's what it is
for the top teams in the world.
Right. It's not
saying.
A cash grab. It is a. I mean, it's just a cash windfall.
But like you guys said, it's not like those teams aren't making money right now, right?
Sure,
well, I mean,
not
but
four
it's,
and a half
it's
billion.
The, but here's the thing, Willie. It's just like the Power Five stuff. You're saying, you're making money. Yeah, but these guys are going, yeah, but we don't need to keep you know, we want it all to ourselves. I mean, you don't think some of the power NFL owners, do you think they enjoy divvying it up 32 ways? You don't think if they could get away with it, they would love to be, you know, you don't think Jerry Jones doesn't think like, man, look what I contribute to this league and look what Jacksonville contributes to this league when it comes to revenue. Look at the revenue we generate as opposed to what, you know, Arizona generates, right? I mean, you don't think that he doesn't have that complex, that the ones who generate bring more to the table? They look at some of these other owners that don't bring as much and they're like, why do you get the same amount of money as me?
So who decides – what teams get invited to this Super League?
Well, that, I mean, that,
like,
that's,
is there somebody like that is somewhat of a commissioner that's leading the charge saying, okay, we want you guys?
That I'm not
you
sure
guys,
of.
Guys.
I mean,
how many teams would be in this league?
These teams, well, it was
all around Europe, right?
No, it was originally going to be 12, could in as many as 15 is what they want. So,
from all over Europe, basically, or all over the world? Just Europe, right?
I think it was mainly Europe.
Mainly Europe, because they have the UEFA Champions League that, you know, consists of a lot of these, and see, this is, you have the EPL and La Liga and all these, but the
right.
UEFA, the Champions League, basically would go away if this happens.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
And so that's, they want to have 12 to 15, and I guess they've just all gotten together. This sounds like it's kind of like a backroom deal. They've all just gotten together and said, like, hey, you know, if we got out of this and we went and we formed our own deal,
look how much
more
money we could make.
We'll control everything.
What would it do to soccer? This is a question above my knowledge. But what would it do to the other leagues? Right? I think of this a little bit as, you know, when travel teams started to form and the unintended consequence, unfortunately, is it crushes the neighborhood leagues, right? It leaves a lot of people behind, and the leagues just aren't the same. If the best players from every neighborhood are going to play travel, so if you take the top teams away from all the best leagues in Europe, what does that do to the remaining teams in those leagues?
Well, you answer the question, if the Power Five form their own Super League, what does that do to the rest of the leagues?
Well, I do think there would be an upside for those leagues in that they could play for their own championship, and that could be pretty fun to watch in some ways. I think there would be an upside. There'd be certainly a big downside, too.
Yeah, I mean, I still
I'd like
I
to
think
there
the
would
power...
be a compelling thing. Like, let's say Middle Tennessee is the champion of the Conference USA, and they're playing for a championship in a playoff against the winner from the Sun Belt and the winner from the other.
And I'd be fine with that if they did that.
What's the interest level?
I think it'd be a good interest level.
Okay, that's what I would like to know.
Has spring football changed any of that? Like, did I sit down and watch, you know, TSU and I did not. But you know, if I was flipping through, I might watch for a few minutes and then I, you know, keep flipping through. That was me. But I know there were some people that did that were like, oh, football's on, so I'm gonna watch it, and they were into it. The gambling aspect certainly helped it. Oh, hey, I can bet on football and watch it. So, but to your point, Willie, I have been a proponent of there should be a champion for the Group of Five and then the Power Five. And I do believe that the Power Five is eventually going to break away. They're going to be a league. Like, it's.
But why? We've had this topic has been out there for years and years.
That's why.
Years. And
money.
So why?
Because they could. So this article that I read from Andy Staples where he basically created, now he did a 15-team league, you know, for college football, similar to the Super League, and he consulted with somebody in the know with television and what the contract would be per year, and he said, you know, Staples said that he believed it would be $1 billion per year, and the consultant said, that's all? Closer to 1.5. Per year, if they did that, I mean that's now I already know that they, you know, their deals are pretty lucrative. But if you're getting $1.5 billion a year for a Super League, and we know that it would be more than 15 teams, it would basically be the Power Five. That's why, and then they don't have to share it with anybody else. It's just them.
Why do we think Chelsea and Man City and Barcelona and teams that people thought were going to be in the Super League, why do you think that they're pulling out today?
Well, also, this is another thought that I had. Remember when Texas pulled out or was threatening to pull out of the Big 12? Remember that
whole
thing?
They were coming to the SEC.
Yeah.
Wasn't it Texas, Oklahoma, Texas A&M, and Oklahoma State originally?
It started as a power move by Texas, and Texas basically was saying, we want more, and then the next thing you know, you got a Texas channel on ESPN. Is there still a Texas Longhorn Network or whatever?
Yeah, it's still there. Michael Griffin works for it.
But it was a little bit of what you're saying. Like, hey, we're worth more than a lot of schools. We're bringing more to the table than a lot of schools in our league, so we want more. And if we don't get more, we're going to leave. And they won the power play, right? They stayed, and they got the channel. And I don't know what else they got. I don't remember that far back. But it started the whole seismic, you know, all kinds of people were moving to different conferences. That was part of the beginning of it all.
Well, I remember that was, you know, they were moving everywhere. That's when A&M and Missouri joined the
SEC.
But
basically the league had to sit there and go, all right, are we just going to let people leave? You know, I guess if they want to leave, what can we do about it? And do we consider meeting their needs? Right? So is that what's happening in Europe with these teams that are like, well, we'll leave.
Probably.
We don't like what we're doing,
we'll
leave. So the league comes to them and says, well, what do we have to do to keep you here?
We can't lose you. It's certainly a power play. I mean, that's what it is. And
so ultimately, what do they want? Do they want to stay in their league and just be in better standing? I don't know. I don't know the soccer world very well, but I don't know. I would think, I mean, I don't know that I'm going to lose sleep over it one way or the other, but I kind of like the tradition of, you know, the English Premier League. That wouldn't be the same without some of those teams, right? If a couple of those teams left, that'd be weird.
Yeah,
and what does it do to that league?
I would think the EPL would definitely figure out a way to keep them. I mean, that's the most powerful soccer league in the world.
Well,
right?
But it didn't seem like they were begging them to stay. It was more trying to strong arm them. Like, yeah, okay, fine, this is what we're going to do. We're going to make your life a living hell if you do it. So
listen,
it seems like.
I'm trying to learn enough. MLS.
I was going to say, the three of us don't know enough about, and it's a pretty fresh story. We don't know enough about
but
it.
I like the sort of the parallels of what we've seen on stuff that we do know something about, and just trying to figure out what are the accurate comparisons and what's completely different over there.
Sure.
It's really an interesting story.
Well, and I want to hit this this article and see
well,
if you
guys
agree
with the
team.
The other side. Yeah, let's.
The grand finale.
Yes.
Yeah. Willie, you tell everybody about Lee Company, and then we will touch on this to close out Tuesday's show.
All right. Lee Company, of course, the big sponsor of our show, of our Predator coverage. They do an outstanding job. The next chapter is tomorrow night. 102.5 The Game. It's the game against the Predators against the Blackhawks, round 2 of 3. 2 in a row in Chicago. We'll have the radio coverage, as always, on 102.5 The Game. Darren will start the pregame show at 5 o'clock. It's a 6 o'clock start. And the game, actually, on television is on NBC tomorrow. But Lee Company is a proud sponsor of the Nashville Predators, and they want you to know that. They also want you to know that they can take care of your general maintenance needs at home and at work. If you've got a maintenance problem at work, and it's a problem that's been sitting there on your desk, and you're thinking, man, I just got to do something about this, pick up the phone and call 615-567-1000 right now. Or just go online and make an online appointment. Whatever's easier for you, whatever you prefer, just make the appointment, and then you're done with it. And they'll come out and fix the problem. If it's with your air conditioning service, if it's with your heating service, if it's with just general maintenance, floors, doors, gates, things like that, they've got that department at Lee Company. Wide array of services, and they're ready to help you. Lee Company, 615-567-1000 or leecompany.com. Let their decades of expertise go to work for you.
Be sure to tune in every weekday for your chance to win $1,000. You heard me right. It's the game's 1K payday. Listen for keywords at 9 o'clock, noon, and 3 p.m. So you'll get another chance at 3 p.m. When you hear it, go to thegamenashville.com and enter the keyword for a shot at $1,000. Back here on Darren, Donnick, and Chase, we were talking about the Super League that I guess they were trying to form over in Europe when it comes to European soccer. But I don't know. It looks like it's completely unraveling. And something along those lines, Chase, you were reading before the show today.
Yes. Andy Staples of The Athletic put this together and said, you know, if college football was going to do a 15-team, 15-program Super League, what teams would be in, what would be out? And, you know, you think about it off the top of your head. I mean, there's some pretty obvious names. Alabama obviously comes to mind.
This is football only. This is not an athletic program.
Well, he calls it program, but we're looking at it just from a football, college football Super League. So, yes, okay. Just college football.
So is this like a fantasy world, or is this, okay, the top 15 football programs would compete in everything else, all the other 18 sports or whatever they have, and just football would do their own thing?
Yes, this would be a 15-team Super League. It would be, it's
football,
the same.
Football only.
Football only. It's the same thing, same concept as the soccer. So, I just told you one. You know, throw out some teams that you think would be in here.
Alabama, Ohio State, for sure.
Yep.
Clemson, for sure.
Yep.
LSU, for sure.
Yep.
So that is, what was that, 4?
Yep. Alabama, you said Clemson, LSU, Ohio State.
Mm-hmm. Oklahoma.
Yep.
It's 5. Nebraska.
Yep.
No.
Yep.
Really?
Why not?
They're on here.
Nebraska's on there? Wow.
Yeah, why not?
They are.
Because here is what it is. I mean, if you have a 15 team thing, like whoever you pick, you got the, you know, you're going to have automatic recruiting superiority, right?
Okay. Georgia.
Yep.
So to me, it's like the 15
Florida
most lucrative programs, right?
Yep, Florida.
Okay.
So out of the SEC so far, you've named Alabama, Florida, Georgia, LSU.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay. What do we think, Willie? Michigan? Is Michigan in there?
I would say Texas A&M in terms of resources.
Texas A&M.
Texas A&M is not.
Not.
Michigan is.
What about Michigan?
Michigan is, for sure.
Okay.
That's a no. I mean, yes, they have a lot of. Oregon.
Is it?
It is.
Wow.
That's a good guess. I was wondering if either one of you would bring
USC?
USC.
So where are we at?
So you've named Alabama, Clemson, Florida, Georgia, LSU, Michigan,
Nebraska. Does he think this could actually happen, or is this just a fun
Ohio
thing
State.
Based
this
on
is
the
just
soccer
a,
deal?
It's just
I
a
think
fun
this
thing.
Is kind of like the Barrett-Salee thing. It's just it's another list. It's list time.
Yeah, Ohio State, Oklahoma, Oregon, USC. You've left out a
– So we're missing
this
how many
teams?
This
would be basically a professional league.
How many schools
like
are we –
Like, why even have the guys go to school? You would just kind of say these are host places.
One, two, three, four. You're missing four.
Four more.
Texas, did we name?
Texas
no, we did not.
No,
we did not name
one.
Texas. Texas. Yep. This is a shot in the dark. Penn State.
Very good. Penn State has won.
Okay, so two more.
And you missed a big one.
We've missed a big one. Oh, Florida State?
No.
Florida State's not on there.
No.
Wow, boy. How far the mighty have fallen.
Notre Dame.
Notre Dame.
There you go. Yep, Notre Dame. And then the final one, I'm glad that I'm glad you haven't named this team because I kind of was like, with that.
I'm trying to think of what conference we've not hit on. So we've got two from the Pac-12. Hit a couple Big 12 now. We've littered the SEC. Not much from the ACC. Is Clemson the only ACC?
Yes. This team is from the SEC.
It's from the SEC. So it must
Arkansas?
Be Auburn. Auburn. Yeah,
Auburn.
Auburn.
It is Auburn.
Yeah.
And I was
just
like,
think about what
you
it
just
would
bringing
do.
Them
could,
along because of
Alabama. You could put almost anybody in there. And the exclusivity of having a 15-team league that nobody else has access to would get you the best players in the country.
Sure. Mm-hmm. Oh, absolutely. It would – if you did
then you
this –
you would gravitate. You would have revenue streams that you've never had before. You could put – I mean, in theory, you could put Wake Forest in there, and they would have huge advantages. You know, they would get players they'd never had before because they want to play in that league. Be a weird way to be a world-changing kind of thing.
But you have to admit, I mean, these 15 that he named, these are blue blood programs.
Well, let me ask you this, too. These are blue blood programs, but would the thinking change? Like, for example, would a television market all of a sudden become more important than how big your stadium is? If you wanted to promote this league and this is a new thing, wouldn't you want maybe a team like Rutgers, like wouldn't Rutgers bring more to the table with the New York market?
Yeah, but I don't think, you know, to that point, though, I don't think you would have to really worry about it because people are going to watch because of, you know, what these programs already are, and you're just going to make
them
better.
That's true.
I mean,
they're super games, so everybody's going to be watching.
And he does mention, because you both were like Nebraska, and he goes,
that
it
one
is here
surprises
that,
me.
He goes, it is here that you might note that Nebraska is 16-28 in the past four seasons. This is true, but Nebraska also remains a brand name, though it won't be for much longer if the Cornhuskers don't turn things around soon.
Nebraska over Florida State.
See?
I don't know.
Nebraska. Florida State is, you know, they're kind of behind, right, in the facilities.
That's what started the whole Jimbo thing. I know.
So,
and that
stadium's Tennessee
never
not
been
in
nearly
there.
As big. Like, Nebraska is such a bigger operation, I've always felt like.
He does put this in there. 10 years ago, Tennessee makes this list instead of Clemson.
No, they make the list easy.
Yeah, instead of Clemson.
It's a shame. 10 years. I mean, they make the list easy.
20, maybe.
No.
10?
I think even
10 years
ago.
10 years ago? Clemson you would have on the list 10 years ago?
No.
I don't think so. 10 years ago, Florida State would be on that list.
No doubt.
Based on winning and success, but I don't know if this whole thing should be based on that.
That will do it for our show today. Good stuff. Everybody enjoy this beautiful Tuesday. Continue to be safe. We want you back with us tomorrow on Hump Day starting at 10 a.m. Stay tuned. Stillman & Company is next.